Hello and welcome to this week's podcast. I'm Helen Tovey, editor of Family Tree, and with me is
Nathan Ward. Hello there.
Hi, Nathan.
Hi.
Well, I've had a pretty good time. I haven't really accomplished anything, but I've had fun. How about you?
I've tried to calm my mind, and now I feel really guilty. I'm saying this out loud, but I've done very little. But I felt really overloaded after like my initial splurge.
Yeah.
Right, okay, I will not let myself sit there for hours and hours and hours. I will just do a little small bit and feel content in that. So since we last spoke, I've got a couple of extra dates, like from my great grandparents. So they're all ticked off now. So it was a small bit, but it's satisfying. I've filled that element of it, and I managed to stop, which was an achievement in itself.
It is. Because sometimes if you get too addicted to something and then you have to make yourself almost go cold turkey, because if you've done too much family history and all your jobs are piling up around your house or in your life, things you should be doing, and then you think, oh, I can't actually take this in my life because it's kind of knocking everything else out of kilter. So you do have to rein it in a little bit sometimes so you're not too tired and then you're hoovering and everything else.
Well, I had so many names and dates swimming around my head. It was too much. But I've gone all in far too quickly, like I normally do. Let's just slow it down a bit. And then there's a part of me that I don't know if this is true or not, but obviously, it is true. The further back you're going to get, the harder it's going to get. So I kind of want to savor and enjoy the discovery part that I know I'm actually going to be able to do now, as opposed to saying, right, let's get it all done, and it's done. And then I'm just stuck. I don't want to be in that position just yet. I want to, you know, just nicely, wistfully just go through it all, find a few bits and be really happy and satisfied.
It sounds very good. It definitely does gets harder as you go further back for lots of reasons. One is that, the first one is for each generation you go back, you're getting double the number of ancestors. So you go from your 8 times great-grandparents to your 16 people in your great-great-grandparent level. So straight away, you've got twice the number of people you're looking for. And then, as you say, your mum's living memory, she's going to have fewer clues to give you to. It's like little breadcrumbs on the trail. And when you go really further back, then the records can get harder to find. But you've got plenty to go at. So you look at the moment, you're in the thick of getting those birth, marriage and deaths. And then I don't think you've got into the census yet. So you're just going to love the census when you get into that. So you've got lots to look at and look forward to looking at about all your people so far. And then you can even stick with doing your grandparents, your great-great-grandparents and great-great-grandparents. And then think, I'm not going to go any further back from it. I'm just going to pad them out. I'm going to get all of those siblings in. All of that we talked about. So you've got lots to do in a pretty nice time frame because those Victorian records are so well kept and pretty comprehensive.
Yeah, that's fab. I mean, I can't remember who I was looking at, but I did have a nosy at one entry on the 1921 census. And that obviously gave me siblings. And that, again, as I said before, I don't want to go down that path too soon, but I will. It's there. It's out there for me to find, isn't it? So that will be exciting.
Yeah.
Yes. Just try to keep myself calm and steady and enjoy it and not feel overwhelmed by it. That's my biggest challenge at the moment.
Well, I think that sounds a good tactic. Shall I tell you what I got up to?
Yes,
so
please.
Can you remember what I was going to get up to?
This was based on a reader question about, you're challenging my memory now. A woman who might have been married twice, who might have had different parents, who might have had a different child, who might have lived in a different country. So no, I don't remember anything about it. It was something very confusing with lots of names and numbers.
It was a reader who'd written in, and she had a problem that she couldn't work out what was correct because she had a woman named Maria Morris back in the early 1800s with one husband's name. Then Ancestry had given her a hint and it had a different husband's name. And then she went on to find my past and it had that this woman had married twice so that both husbands were correct. So then she's like, wait a minute, what's going on here? So she'd sent that in and we had tried to brainstorm what she could do to try and find out the answer. And off the top of my head, I found even just getting the facts together in my head and putting them all in the ducks in a row, I couldn't even really do that because it's hard to take in information when someone gives you a quick bleh, download stuff.
But I mean, I read the question out and it confused me as I was reading it. It was full of names and facts and dates, wasn't it? So
yeah,
a lot to take in.
Yeah. So I thought, right, I'm going to just go about this methodically and see what I can find out. So, spoiler alert, I have not solved the mystery, but I've had loads of fun in the process. And what I find fun is it's when you start on a new bit of family history, a new branch, or in this case, it's somebody else's tree, but it's the same difference. Then you have all of that blank canvas and all of that feeling of being a little bit at sea and you haven't got a clue what's going on. And I love that because then you have to be your detective hat. You're arriving at not the crime scene, but you're arriving at the scene and you know nothing. So you have to get really organized and clear-headed, or you're going to do the going around in circles thing, which we've already established over every single podcast. We hate going around in circles and we love logging it on a research log, haven't we? So This is what I did. So I'll see if I can put... So I'm sharing my screen with Nathan, which is no good to anybody listening to the podcast. But whenever I start a brand new bit of research, then I open up a Word document. I should really have made a template of this, but I've never made a template. So I just know the words off the top of my head. And so I type research plan. So I'm going to have two parts of my thing. I'm going to have the research plan and I'm going to have the research log. So in my plan, I'm going to write, what is the question? What is it I'm trying to work out? So I try and write that down in as few words as possible so I know the really precise question I can hold in my head. So I've got the research plan, which has a question, and then I have a goal, what I'm going to try to accomplish. And then I write down, what do I already know? So what is known at the outset? And I establish all of that in my head. Some of it can feel a little bit repetitive, but it just helps you clarify, what do I know? What don't I know? What do I know to which level of certainty? And then I create a family tree from all the clues that I have so far, because I'm a really visual person. And without a family tree, I am lost. So I create a little family tree. And obviously on Ancestry or lots of the other websites, like FamilyPass, for instance, MyHeritage, you can create multiple trees. And so you don't just have to have, if you're doing it for a friend, for instance, you can have your own tree and you can create a separate tree for them. So we've created one for this reader secretly on Ancestry. I've kept it private because I don't want anyone else to see it, because I'm just working it out and it could be wrong what I'm going to work out. So I think it's nice to make it private. Don't want to be sharing misinformation any more than I can help. And then on my shopping list of things I'm going to do, I have a list of sources I'm going to look at. And so I'll just rack my brains of everything which might be useful. And so I haven't actually created the list yet. This is where I've got up to. So I need to create a list of sources. But when you're first arriving at a research question, so let's say you're trying to find a new branch in your family tree or a new ancestor you want to learn about, and maybe they're in a different county you're not familiar with, or a different country, or a different era, or a different line of work, you have no clue. So this is my single best tip for getting yourself in the know. Well, there's two tips really, but this is one really good. If you're sticking with, we're banging on about Ancestry at the moment because you're on Ancestry and you're a new member to Ancestry, aren't you, Nathan?
Yeah.
So is go to the Ancestry card catalogue. So you go to Ancestry, from the menu you choose search, you scroll down to card catalogue, and this reader, her ancestors came from Norfolk. So you just put Norfolk into the search field, and then it'll bring up a list of all the records which relate to Norfolk. Some of them will be too late for this reader's query, some will be too early, but you can then drill down and fine tune to get a list of record collections. So like one collection, an example of a collection is baptisms for Norfolk between this date and that date. So what you're doing is you're drawing up a shopping list of places to look for the information you need.
Can I just interrupt?
Yes.
Go for it. So if you're looking for these records that you're naturally searching for, but also obviously if you are using Ancestry, it does give you the hints. Are they not one and the same, or is it the fact that there's going to be more that Ancestry doesn't pull in?
They're completely and utterly different. It's a completely and utterly different way of working. So there's a few different ways you could go on Ancestry. So you could go on Ancestry, you start building your tree, you look at the hints that appear on your people on your tree, you click them, you see what they're suggesting and you go, yes, no, maybe. And so, and you behave accordingly. Another way, you go on Ancestry, you go to search and it has the big main search field and you pop in your ancestor's name and perhaps if you know their date or place of birth, pop in a few key details that you have, press search, It'll search all the millions and millions, billions of records that it has, bringing up all the people who match and roughly match those search terms. And so you are doing such a big search and you're completely out of control in both of those two situations. I think I'm going to sound like a real control freak now. So the first one, the hints, you're at the mercy of what they decide or don't decide to hint to you. And what they hint to you may or may not be your correct ancestor by that name. Yeah. With the big search, you go in, you put in the details that you have, you press search, boom, and all these records come back from all sorts of time periods and all sorts of people with different husbands and fathers and wives and daughters and sisters, because they've got the same name, but that's where the similarity ends with your ancestor. Obviously, some of them are going to be exact matches for your ancestor, but a lot of them aren't. Or you do my way, which is kind of old school, and it's not an easy win way, but it's a really good, you like being calm and methodical, because you know exactly what you're doing. So you've gone to the card catalogue, and basically that's a list of all the thousands of record collections that Ancestry have. You know, you only want to look at the ones that are relevant to Norfolk. So you put Norfolk in, boom. You've drilled down. Out of the thousands of record collections, you've just got 30. You know that you're going to be looking in the early 1800s. So you can either scan your eye and find collections of interest, or you can filter just to get the right period. And so you've controlled the search. And then you go, right, I'm going to look at these baptisms for Norfolk, for which cover the date span of the early 1800s, so go wider than that, but doesn't matter. You click on that, you've got a link straight away. You can copy that link into your research log and you write, and you can copy the name of it, so Norfolk baptisms, whatever the date span is. And so you know exactly what you're searching. And then you can put in your search terms. So you can say, I'm going to search for Maria Morris, born in 1817, plus or minus 2 years, find how many results I get. And so this is the thing of the don't go around in circles. Then you know exactly what you're doing. You know what you search for. If the phone rings or you suddenly remember something, you have to leave your search. You know exactly where you were and you know what you've tried. So you don't keep trying the same thing with the same useless results. And then you can go to another collection. Yeah. And so it's just so organized and it's so peaceful. And you've out of your search, like, let's say you put in the big main search thing on the main search field and just went, Ancestry, how many Maria Morrises have you got born in 1817? It comes out with all these ones born in Mexico and everything else. Then, which aren't relevant to you, if they aren't relevant to you, then you've got rid of all of them because you're only looking for the ones born or baptised in Norfolk.
Yeah, that's Bob.
It's really good, isn't it? I love it.
Really, nail it down.
I would never, ever bother doing any other searching way. I always go to the card catalogue. Well, not so light. Sometimes I do the other way, but I just love the card catalogue way because it's organised and calm and you can log it and you can expand.
You're in control.
You're in control and you know what you're doing and you're the detective on the case and you don't want to just be like flailing around, do you? Like, you want to have a plan and you're acting on the plan and... Yeah, and you're ruling in and out possibilities and, yeah.
Yeah, I want all the facts, all the correct ones.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes. And when I've waffled on before about how important it is to know whether there are other possible contenders going by the same name in the same place, which is such an important thing because so many people, we all do it, you know, we think we've got the right Maria Morris and then we realise, oh, Maria Morris is a really common name in our ancestors' town and we've got the wrong one on our tree and we've collected all the wrong one's ancestors. So if you've researched this way, you know whether you get a real feel quickly for how many other contenders there are. So, and this is another thing. So I've accomplished nothing. I found out nothing, but I've made a really organised plan and a really organised start. And the reason I haven't found out anything is because I can't find Maria's baptism in the Norfolk collection so far. And I've experimented that a little bit. And I've written a little note what I need to do next time. This is only within the last week and I already would forget what I have to do. So what do I have to do next time? Oh, yes. So I found Maria's parents and I found three possible burials of somebody who, of Rebecca, because I'm wondering whether she died. So then I need to log all these place names I'm finding on a map, which is another useful tip. Because if you don't know the area, I don't know Norfolk very well.
Hello.
If you don't know the precise little place names, they could be one little village next to the other little village, couldn't they, with two different names. So I think they're two completely different people. But actually, it could be the same person and they just got a slightly different address for one period of their life into another. So I just need to learn all of this. And all of us have to keep learning this, every single new little branch of our family tree that we do. So I kind of felt like a newbie again, but it's kind of what you have to do every single time you start a new little bit of research.
Yeah, I like it. It's quite intriguing, isn't it? It's just a little mystery for you to solve.
Yeah. And it's fun, and you spot other things, and it just makes me better at doing my research because I have to be methodical. Yeah.
I mean, this log that you just showed me now, it looks really methodical. Mine looks like a right mess in comparison, I have to say.
Yeah. I'll send you my little shopping list of what I do.
Thank you. Well, I might have to use this for when I solve my mystery of Auntie Mildred.
Yeah. I mean, the bad thing is about mine is that it can make you be like spend far too much time being far too cautious and far too methodical, and you could accomplish it much quicker another way. So passing is perfect, but it makes me feel very calm.
Yeah, well, that's good. If you believe in your facts, it does help you, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Like for me, if I can cut off at my great grandparents and know that everything about them is correct, that's a comfort zone, isn't it? To then carry on afterwards. Whereas if I'm like, well, there's a little bit of a grey area there, you're always going to be wondering, have I gone wrong somewhere? Am I going to go off on a tangent? Like a wrong tangent. Obviously, I'm going to go off on a tangent. It's just whether, you know, is it the right tangent to go on or a wrong one?
Yes. Yeah, we don't want to go off on wrong tangents because that is a bit dismal.
Yeah.
I mean, for lots of us, a lot of the time, then, you know, doing our family history, this feels like a nice little reverie or a nice little exercise. But there's sometimes with family history, then it, what's the word? It really, really matters, and it's not a matter. It's not just a matter of kind of lighthearted interest. Remembering the people who've come before us and making sure that their stories are researched thoroughly and accurately, and their record isn't forgotten, is really, really important. And so, like right round at the moment, you know, we're coming up, we're late January, and so. That's Holocaust Memorial Day. And then, so through this year, through early 2025, we're going to get lots of anniversaries from the World War, the 80th anniversary of the end of the Second World War. And that feels really, it's really poignant, partly the Holocaust history, and then partly even just ordinary British family history, that 80-year period, because all of those people, when it was the 70th anniversary and the 60th anniversary, we had those living relatives around, but now all my grandparents, for instance, have passed on. So lost that living memory thing. We're now at the age where for many of our families, it's up to us to carry that on. The people who live through it aren't here. It's only going to get remembered if we remember it.
Yeah. I think I've said before, I'm quite intrigued to find out some stories, some war stories, or the placement of my family within the war, because I don't really know anything. I've said before about this one, I'm sick of saying it, this one person in a tank. That's the only story I've heard. But even in my research for what I found out, there was a marriage certificate for, again, all the names escape me right now. But anyway, there was a marriage certificate for a couple getting married. He was 24, she was 21, and both fathers were deceased. They got married, so I'm thinking that is war-related. So there's then going to be stories to find out there about what happened to them. Because it seems,
you know, we have got something. This is related to work. Sorry, Nathan, but at the end of April and beginning of May, they're doing a military masterclass, and it's with this really fun guy called Graham Bandy, who is a military family historian, and he's going to be teaching us all how to research our military ancestors. So we need to get some more details about your tank man, and then you can join the military masterclass and you can learn all about him. Because military records are so fun because they're pretty difficult and they have loads of jargon that you just have no idea what they mean. But when you can understand what some of the jargon means, it's so satisfying and you just feel pretty clever.
Nice. Yeah, well, I do think if it actually ends up being true, I think it's tied to the line of my Auntie Mildred. So hopefully in doing that, because I'm going to make that my task for next week. I'm going to follow that. That's going to be my little mystery research project. Get to her. But I think if I get to her, then I might actually find the murmurings of this army story. So I'll let you know how I get on with that.
I've got some, so I know about my grandparents and what they did in the Second World War. She says it very boldly and a sweeping statement. I know some of what they did. I know a little bit. But I've also got a couple of photos which I find intriguing. And one of them, my granny, so my mum's mum, did have at least one boyfriend or a couple of boyfriends before she married my grandpa. And she married my grandpa in the summer of 1946. And he came back from, from Burma. He was a Japanese prisoner of war in Burma. And he came back, I think, quite late. Like he had to stay out there for a few months. They had to feed him up because he was in a really bad way. And then he was well enough to travel. And eventually he came back to England. And I think they got married within quite a short time frame of meeting each other. Anyway, before that, she had a few boyfriends. So I have these random photos in my family photo collection. There's one guy called Peter, and he looks really smart. And I think he's gone to Buckingham Palace to get some sort of award. And I think he might be an old flame. And like, how do I find out this? And should I really? Is it just too nosy? I don't know.
That was really cool. That was really interesting.
And then, this story, this is not our, well, it is our, well, it is one of our family stories, but it's actually nothing to do with our family. And we're going to have to get the woman's name off my mum again. Anyway, so my granny used to have a gardener called Mr. Cheese. And Mr. Cheese apparently was pretty handsome. And one day, my granny was talking to, they had a person, my granny had four children very, very quickly after the Second World War, like proper baby boomer batch of babies. And a young woman used to live with them to help look after the four children. Anyway, my granny and the young woman are both chatting away about how gorgeous Mr. Cheese is. And my granny goes, oh, I happily run away with Mr. Cheese. And then they realise that the window's open and Mr. Cheese is busy outside doing the weeding. And we don't have to say this. So there are fits of giggles. And then, so that's why granny's kind of a little, it wasn't a romance or anything. So I don't want to cast any aspersions on that. She's a very honourable woman. And then the young woman who lived with them, she was eating breakfast one day and a letter arrived. And the letter was arrived from this man in New Zealand who fancied the young woman and said, come out to New Zealand, marry me, we'll have a great life together. And so she was all obviously in a complete fluster about this. And she decided, yeah, I'm going to go. So she went and she married him. They lived happily ever after. They had loads of kids and grandchildren and everything else. My mum even knows this woman's name. So I would just love to find out who was Mr. Cheese is one mystery completely. Unimportant, really, and I shouldn't go down these rabbit holes. So the other is, who was the young girl who was staying with my granny who had this Mr. Cheese episode? God, you could get so sidetracked with family history, can't you? It's crazy.
And we clearly need to find out how handsome Mr. Cheese really was.
We need a photo of Mr. Cheese. Well, my grandpa was very handsome, so I think Mr. Cheese must have been really handsome. Yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
Who knows? Well, we can find out.
That's your new homework.
Yeah. What I've also got to do is make a list of all the waffle that I put in the podcast about Mike, so I don't keep telling everyone the same anecdotes. But
I'll shout at you if you do. Don't worry.
Shut up.
We've heard this one before.
Yeah.
But right. Anytime I mention, I'm not allowed to mention people in tanks unless I know any more information.
Okay. I'd like to help you find out who Tank Man is.
Yeah, I think. See, there's definitely something, because there's a local cenotaph in the village I was born in, because obviously, yeah, it's all local. And I think his name's on there, so I've got...
You are so close to finding out a lot, then.
There's something going on, yeah. It's funny how all this stuff comes back to me. Like I said, I hadn't even thought about this Auntie Mildred until this random daydream. And now, as we talk, all these little bits of my childhood are coming back to me, and it's like, I've run past that cenotaph almost every day. I should stop. I'll stop and photograph it next time I go by and see if I can find his name.
Definitely. And it's one of these really sad things that if an ancestor died in the First or Second World War, that is obviously a tragedy. But from a family history point of view, it makes them so much easier to trace.
Mm.
And so straight away you can go, you can find his name on that war memorial, and then you can look on the Commonwealth War Graves website. And sometimes on the war memorials, they include their regimental numbers, which is really, really helpful because there are so many hundreds of thousands of people recorded. You get multiple people with the same name. It's always that thing. Have you got the right person by the same name? So having their military number will help you establish whether you have. And then on the Commonwealth War Graves website, completely free to use, you may be lucky enough to find a photograph of the grave. You may find that they have next of kin information, which will help verify you have got your right man as well. You'll find out which unit he was in. You'll find out his date of death. You will find, very often there are plans of the memorials and the graveyards, because obviously there's lots of memorials for lots of people went missing. So lots of people are buried, but lots of people aren't actually buried. They're memorialized because their bodies weren't found or identifiable. Or,
Yeah.
So that's a really exciting project to do, and it's accomplishable on the whole. Touchwood.
Yeah, yeah.
Then you can find out unit war diaries and find out what their units were up to on the date when he died. Oh my God, you're gonna have such fun. And the whole thing. I shouldn't sound so happy about this. Sorry, it's just the research is fun. But even though it's not fun, the topic. So I'm sorry, yeah. I was really disrespectful, everybody.
Totally understand though, because it is like that exciting part for me. Like when you were talking about medals and I forgot what they're called now, the ribbons with the colours on and things like that. That's really intriguing. And just to have some element of that to research, it does sound fascinating. Hopefully I'll have a story. We'll soon find out, I guess.
Mm. And the Second World War medal index cards, I hope I didn't get this wrong. I think they've only recently come available online on Ancestry at the end of last year. And this is a really big deal. So for the last... oh, I didn't even know how long, 10 or 15 years, we've had access to the First World War Medal Index card. So why that's good is like a big resource holding, for the First World War, it's a really comprehensive record and has most of the people who served in the British Army in the First World War. So even if your ancestor was an officer or a soldier, you're going to be able to find them. But then for the Second World War, that wasn't available, and now there is a more comprehensive index, but it's not as comprehensive as the First World War, but it's still a really good starting point. So if you find their details in there, it'll say what medals they got, and then you can Google pictures of the medals and learn what the eligibility criteria was, so you'll know why they got the medal, which is cool.
Right. That is really cool, yeah. Mm-hmm. Anything cool to trace back? Sounds like I've come to it at the right time then.
Family Tree is here to help you. Yeah, we are. We've got a really good article going in by the same guy, by Graham, in the May issue. He's doing this masterclass. Oh, and you'll be working on the workbook, Nathan. So you're going to be really intrigued when you work on that military workbook. Because he has all the tips about like decoding the documents, and when you get the family photo, what does this mean? Like how you can spot the little clues of the buttons and the cap badge and all that. You'll be paying. It was going to take you ages to design the workbook because you're going to be so busy getting sidetracked.
I've never seen Nathan so interested in this magazine before. Yeah. Taking so long. Well.
Yeah.
I could definitely tell the difference though. Like when I am working on the magazine, I suddenly, like obviously I read through it and I work through it, but now things actually make sense to me. And I'm like, oh yeah, I've been there. I've done that. Yeah. And it's fascinating. It's like, oh, this could be really useful.
And now you know why I always go, the screen grabs have got to be legible, Nathan, because people will be able to know what you're showing them.
I appreciate it much more now.
Yes, they've got to be readable. So they might look like a boring old screen grab, but they're saying something really useful. So, Nathan, we've been talking about all sorts of things to do with records, and you definitely, to me, from when you shared your research with me, I think it's shaping up pretty well. So how long is it, before you think you've got enough information in your tree that you're going to go back and revisit your DNA match list and see whether you can make any more sense of your match list by looking at the details you've got in your tree, looking at your matches trees and seeing if you can get any clarity there on how your match is related to you?
To be honest, the linking of the two still confuses me a bit. I understand like the generational aspect of it, like you've discussed before. but I don't understand my need to do that, if that makes any sense. I guess I probably want to complete my great greats.
Okay.
Because then I think I'm going to start.
Oh, I think it'd be fantastic if you could do that, yes.
You reckon, is that viable? You think get to that point and then look at DNA?
Yes. So I do really enjoy DNA, but for me, traditional family history is, I prefer it to DNA. So I'm like, take as long as you want with the paper records, and then, because it's never going to be a waste of time, and it will serve you so well when you go back to do your DNA. So it's fine. You're not wasting time. You're not wasting opportunities by not doing your DNA. You're building a really strong bed of knowledge so that your DNA will be much more fun and much more, your matches will be much more intelligible to you.
Yeah. I mean, if I'm perfectly honest, obviously my jumping on point was DNA, but if I'm honest, I'm still having a massive sulk about it. This week, I actually sulked about it more than when I actually found out. So I was watching a bit of The Northman. Have you watched that film?
No.
It's about a Viking type chap who gets captured, and then it's a revenge thriller, but done in a very Nordic way. It's brutal. It's quite violent. But anyway, it made me sulk quite a lot whilst I was watching it that I'm not a Viking. So then I went on to my DNA matches in case it had changed. Obviously, it hasn't changed. And then I went on to my traits, and I've looked at some of these traits, and I've decided they're all wrong, and therefore my DNA is wrong, and I am a Viking. So yeah, I'm having a little sulk right now, but these traits are just crazy. It all ties into my running as well. I'm an avid runner, if anyone has guessed that, because we talk about it occasionally. But it says things like, I'm not good at endurance running. I'm going to sulk about that because I am. And then it says, I'm more likely to be fast. And what does it? I can't remember which one it is. Anyway, it's just all confused, and I just don't agree with it. All these traits are wrong. There. Sorry, I'm sulking.
That's okay. I mean, that kind of makes sense because you're going to have some traits. So with endurance, it could be that I think you do look like a runner, but in a different circumstance, say somebody could not be naturally an endurance runner, but they score highly on pig-headedness, and so they are an endurance runner. It could be that sort of situation.
I think to be a runner, you have to be stubborn anyway, don't you? So it's just one of them said, I'm less likely to be able to run long distances, and I'm less likely to be fast. And I'm like, I can do both of those things. Runner's high. I'm less likely to have a runner's high. Maybe that's true. Spicy food. It says I'm less likely to like spicy food. I do like spicy food. I might not be able to handle it. Speedy. Less likely to be speedy when playing sports. It says slower, right? And then the next one, sprinting. Likely to be a sprinter. Yes, I am. So which one am I? Am I slow and I'm doing sports, or am I speedy? It's wrong. I'm a Viking. There. Solved it. Solved it all.
I've got, you know, when I give you information off the top of my head, and I do it, it's, I'm trying to be as accurate as possible, but it's very much in the moment. And sometimes it's not quite as accurate as I might wish. So I've got a little confession. I've got another confession.
You're basically saying you've just been lying to me the entire
time. Not lying, just not being as accurate as if I was writing it down on paper and then reflecting for a nanosecond before it came out of my mouth. So could I just give another little correction for some information I've given you?
You can. Can I just have one more moment?
Yes.
It says I'm going to drink 5 cups of coffee a day and I only have 2. So 100% Viking. Carry on.
Okay, so this is not going to cheer you up because it's... So I gave you false hope. I said that a few weeks ago. I can't remember when. You got your results back. You were sad about... This is what reminded me that I needed to own up to you. It said that you weren't a Viking. And I said, well, not to worry. They only test roughly about... I think it's 700,000 of your base pairs, and you've got 3 billion base pairs. So there's all those other base pairs which they haven't tested, so they might find out you're a Viking out of those ones. But even at the time when I said it, I knew it wasn't really true what I said, and I was just trying to cheer you up. But then I was like, oh, now I've given him false hope, and that's complete misinformation and everything else. So you're not a Viking. We know that. It's sad, and you're finding it hard to come to terms with. I'm trying to distract you with your family history, but sometimes it just bubbles up again, doesn't it?
I'm bubbling up right now.
But the reason you're not those other millions and billions of base pairs which haven't been analysed in this autosomal test, the reason they're not going to show that you're a Viking is because they're the ones, they're just the they're just like the chaff which go, yeah, yeah, Nathan's a human. And so the autosomal tests test the segments of DNA which are going to be able to be genealogically helpful and fine-tune how we're all related to each other.
So it ignores the things that distinguish me from a banana, basically, that stuff.
That's precisely what it does, yes. Yeah. Somebody was saying that the other day. This is the third conversation I've had about banana now in the last week. So somebody said to me that they're going to do a talk on that, and then somebody else mentioned it, and now you've mentioned the blooming banana. Yes, because it's 99% similar to banana, but we're only 50% similar to our kids. Work that out. Yeah, that's why we all...
I'm sure there's like some kind of amusing analogy there, but I didn't go that way because it involves like peeling skin, whatever. Anyway.
Yeah. So we're not going to cover that. We'll let the other people, I think it has been covered, probably on... Anyway, well, the other people cover why you're 99% similar to a banana.
I am not a banana.
Yes. You're very similar to a
banana. Oh, I'm closer to a banana than I am to a Viking. That's really upsetting.
Yes, you're more banana than Viking.
Podcast name sorted.
Oh. So I'm torn between two things, what I'm going to get on with this week. I am going to carry on having a bit more of a methodical rattle through with this reader question, Maria Morris, and then I'm going to hold my hands up and I'm going to stop hogging Maria's question. I'm going to send it off to a proper expert who can answer it in the magazine. So you do this really cool reader research service where you don't send everyone's questions off, but you send off selected questions to experts and ask them to help. And we publish it free to the reader in the magazine. So at the rate I'm going, I'm not making headway. So I thought I was going to have how hard can it be? It's hard. Mm-hmm. Well, of course, otherwise you wouldn't have written in, would you? So I'm torn between that and also my own family history. I need to do that. Yeah.
Yeah. Do your own stuff.
Do my own. Yeah. My own. Sort out my own problems. Yeah. And you've got your Auntie Mildred.
Yeah, I think it's time for the mystery of Auntie Mildred. I think it's going to, one, let me know who she is, two, test my new research skills, see if I can find the right path, and then three, hopefully set me up for some military stories so maybe I can attend that webinar. Find out a bit more.
Sounds really good. I can't wait to hear what you find out. And just let me know in the meantime, like, ping me a message and I don't mind trying to help you.
Really?
I don't want your help. You always keep getting things wrong, and then you got lazy. You
keep lying to me. That's not true. Yeah, no, I literally had to stop myself from texting you about 11:30 at night the other night. I was like, oh, I'm really excited about this. I'll send Helen a message. And I'm like, she doesn't want this now. She has to deal with me at work anyway. So I managed to refrain.
I didn't mind. I do really like military research. I do really enjoy it. Yeah. Oh. So I'm happy to try.
Cool. Well, fingers crossed I'll be able to get to the point where I'm at the research stage for that. That'd be cool.
Okay. And we'll reconvene with some cool new facts next time.
Yes. Or as I'm now learning, lots of lies.
Yes. Some lies, some question marks and a few facts.
Well, I better go and drink 5 cups of coffee now, I guess.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Prove one of your traits, right? Bye then.
Okay. Thank you for listening. See you later.